Welcome to the EICC Embassy International Chamber of Commerce podcast.
Welcome, EICC members, to this episode of the podcast. I'm excited to introduce to some and reacquaint to others our President Emeritus, Minister Reginald Winfrey. In this presentation, he is introducing us to why business matters to God. So let's get into it.
Hello, welcome. As you know, my name is Reginald Winfrey with the Embassy International Chamber of Commerce. I want to take a brief moment just to talk with you about Jeff Van Duzer. This is his book, Why Business Matters to God. I want you to know that business was God's idea, and God had a plan and a purpose for business, and he had a plan and a purpose for you in business. So why does business matter to God? We sure it will be a blessing to you. We sure will be profitable to your business as well.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really grateful to the chance to be here. I have admired the work of Redeemer and the Faith and Work Group from a distance for a long time, and so to have this privilege of intersecting even a little bit with its work is really quite an honor for me. So I'm very grateful for this invitation. What I want to talk about this afternoon is what I would call a theology of business, kind of how God thinks about business. And specifically, I want to talk about two big questions. Why business matters to God, and secondly, how. How should business be done from God's perspective? Sometimes I think of why and how under the headings of purpose, what's the purpose of business, and then practice, how should business be practiced. Before I jump right into that, though, I thought I might begin by giving you just a little bit of teeing this conversation up with some sense as to why I think right now a theology of business is so critical. As was said in the introduction, I am the dean of a business school, and really part of my job then is to get out regularly and to meet with community leaders. And because our business school is affiliated with the Free Methodist denomination, I often will meet with Christians in business and Christians who are not in business but who have opinions about business. And over now, looking back over kind of 10 years of coffees and lunches and breakfasts and dinners, some themes have emerged. And I think three of these themes could be captured as answers to big questions. So let me just share those with you first. First, can I ask, as a Christian, how do you think about business? And what has struck me here is the incredible polarity of responses that I've seen. From my friends who are not in business, typically, they will tell me things like business is evil. That capitalism is really raping and pillaging the developing world, that free trade is a scam, that CEOs are lining their own pockets at the expense of the workers, that Wall Street's games and gimmicks are bringing down our country, that basically business is kind of a bad thing, and it's probably shouldn't be that involved with it, and at a minimum, from a societal standpoint, business needs to be tightly controlled. When I go and talk with my friends, Christians in business, however, I get a very different picture. Here I get the picture that capitalism and Christianity are joined at the hip, that you would have a hard time slipping a thin piece of paper in between them. To follow the market is to follow Jesus. The invisible hand of Adam Smith is actually the hand of God. And if these nattering critics over here and the government would just get out of the way and business could operate in a true free market, it would in fact lead us to God's heavenly kingdom. Huge polarity of views. And it does seem to me that what we need in a theology is a capacity for nuance, a capacity to sit in the middle of these warring perspectives and to be able to affirm where affirmation is appropriate and critique where critique is appropriate. The second question I will often ask just to Christians in business, I'll say, how does your business or how does your work in business contribute to God's kingdom? And the answer that I'll usually get here, or at least frequently get, will be something like this. Well, Jeff, I make a lot of money. And I can use my money, I take care of my family, but I also support the church and I support missions and relief organizations. I do a lot of good with the money that I make. And I absolutely want to affirm that. God calls us to be good stewards. He calls us to generosity. I get all of that. But when I'm in a snide mood, I will say, you know, even bank robbers can tithe. You know, tithing is a good thing, but it doesn't really tell you anything about how God feels about bank robbing, per se, or in my case, about business. What I want to know and what I want a theology to be able to do is to figure out how the day-to-day stuff that we do in business, you know, the hiring and firing and negotiating leases and playing with a financial instrument and reading a balance sheet, the nuts and bolts of business, how is it that that stuff matters to God? How is that stuff advancing God's kingdom? Third question. As a Christian in business, what difference does your faith make in how you do your business? And here what I'll often get is a kind of sheepish, well, Jeff, you know, business is business. It's a little bit like chemistry. If you take two atoms of hydrogen and one atom of oxygen, you put them together, you're going to get a molecule of water, and it really doesn't matter if you're a Christian chemist or a non-Christian chemist. And the same is, you know, business is business. Everybody has to kind of do business the same way. But as a Christian, I try to be a little more nice. When I'm in a snide mood, I refer to this as Enron with a smile. It does seem to me often our view of what God calls us to in business is limited to this sort of micro personal level. That is, you know, to be kind, to be respectful, to act with integrity. And we tend to think of the structures and paradigms of business as if they're sort of immutable, like gravity or something. But that's not true. Business is a social construct, and God cares a lot about how it is constructed. And a theology of business needs to be able to be sophisticated enough that it can look at the ways, the structures, the paradigms of business, hold them up against God's values, and where they are out of line, call business to a realignment. So I think a theology of business is desperately needed, a nuanced one that can affirm what is good and important about the really intrinsic day-to-day business activities, and yet at the same time critique and call into question those places where business is out of whack. So purpose and practice, my big two topics. Let me start with purpose. Why purpose of business, what I really mean by this is, if God were to sit back and write a mission statement for the institution of business as a whole, what would he put on that mission statement? Not for any one company, but for the whole of business. What would God say that its purpose was? I remember one time trying to explain this to my dad. My dad is a mild-mannered, quiet, kind of unassuming professor for electrical engineering. And I was explaining that our faculty were wrestling with this question of purpose. And I could see that my dad was getting more and more agitated. And then really, in a way that was quite uncharacteristic, he interrupts me. And he says, Jeff, come on. Everybody knows what the purpose of business is. It's to make money. Or as we like to say in a slightly more sophisticated way in business school, to maximize the return on shareholder investment. This is what Milton Friedman, with business of business is business. And that truly is the dominant model of business operative in our world, the dominant understanding of business purpose. Virtually all public corporations run on that model. Many private organizations run on that model. And I can tell you that virtually all of business school curriculum is built on that model. I want to suggest that that model is at best insufficient and probably just wrong. And that as Christians, we ought to be holding up a different understanding of purpose. And let me tell you how I get there. We were, as I said, faculty gathered around this question of purpose. And we thought, well, let's start by trying to figure out what Scripture might have to say about purpose of business. And there'd be different ways that you could get at this. But what we found ourselves being attracted to is a methodology or an approach that kind of looks at what I call the grand narrative of Scripture. As you know, the Bible is composed of lots of different little stories, lots of different types of genres. But if you stand back and look at it as a whole, it tells one big story, often described as coming in four different movements: creation, fall, redemption, new creation. And so we said, well, let's take a look at each of those movements and see what we can learn about business that might come out of those. And I wish I had enough time this afternoon to kind of take you through all four. But I really, when it came to purpose, at least where we started, was looking at the creation account. This is just really the first two chapters of the Bible, Genesis 1 and 2. But we picked that in part because It gives us a glimpse, and admittedly only a tiny little glimpse, but it gives us a glimpse of what God intended for our world before sin got in and messed everything up. It's a picture of God's perfect intent. And so we thought if we could figure out the purpose that God might have for business coming out of that, that might give us a good place to start. So we started to make some observations, some pretty straightforward observations. First, we noticed that Adam and Eve were assigned work in the garden. I start with this because remarkably to me, when I talk with Christians, many times they have in their mind that work was assigned as a part of the curse. Because Adam and Eve disobeyed, God said, now you have to work. But really, nothing could be further from the truth. If you go through the first couple of chapters, you'll see that there's a whole set of responsibilities given to humanity. You know, ranging from having dominion over the garden, guarding the garden, tilling the ground, naming the animals. It's a collection of 7 or 8 of these. And theologians put them together, and they call them the creation mandate. So from the beginning, God's intention for humanity, in order to be fully human, at least part of our activity, is to be engaged in work. We are said in the 26th verse of the first chapter to have been created in the image of God. Now, theologians have debated over the years what exactly that means. How could the creature carry the glory of the creator? How could it all happen? But, you know, in a very simple-minded way, if you just start at the beginning and you read down to verse 26, you don't know a lot about God except this. God's a worker. God makes things. God creates things. And the things he makes and creates, he calls good, and they have meaning. And if you and I are to be made or to reflect the image of God, then at least a piece of what that means is that we are to be engaged in work that is creative and meaningful. Then we made another observation. We noticed that work in Genesis was set in the context of relationship. You see this first when you think about God. If you, that same verse, the 26th verse of the first chapter that talks about image of God, it's actually a quote of God speaking, and it says, quote, let us make man, humanity, male and female, in our image. Let us and our. It is a plural statement, and theologians say that really this is the first indication of the Trinity anywhere in the Bible. And what it reminds us is that before God did anything, God was in relationship, in loving relationship in the Godhead, and that all task, all work proceeds from relationship and is intended to come back for the benefit of the relationship. And the same was true with human beings. God looks down in chapter 2 and he says, it's not right that Adam is alone. And so he creates Eve, not a second Adam, but Eve, someone with different gifts, different abilities, different skill sets. He puts them together so that out of that relationship, their work can flow. They can engage in the so-called creation mandate, and how that work can then come back for the benefit of their relationship. And as the population grew, it would be to come back for the benefit of the whole, what we sometimes talk about, for the common good. So we were thinking about these ideas and we said, hey, you know what? That's what business does. Business is particularly well suited to bring people together in relationship so that they have opportunities in relationship to engage in meaningful and creative work. And so we concluded that the first statement that God would put on a mission statement for business is that business exists to create opportunities for individuals to express aspects of their God-given identity in meaningful and creative work. Then we went back and looked again. We noticed, again, a fairly obvious conclusion, that the material world matters to God. It's interesting, you know, we don't actually read anything about God creating souls or spirits in Genesis 1 and 2. He creates real things, and each time he creates them, he says, that's good, and when he's done creating the whole thing, he says, that's very good. So material things mattered to God. And then we went on to notice that the Garden of Eden was not complete. Now this actually was a little troubling to me at first because I had always grown up with the understanding that really the Garden of Eden was perfect. I mean, it's what God made. It was perfect. How could it not be complete? But my picture of perfection was a kind of static picture, kind of like a picture in a picture frame. And if only Adam and Eve hadn't screwed it up by eating that fruit, we would still all be walking around the gardens and having grapes fall in our mouth, and that was really what God intended. But if you look closely, you'll see that that's not the case. The garden was perfect, but not in a static sense, but in a dynamic sense, in the sense that it was perfectly resourced. Everything that was needed was embedded in the garden, but what was intended from the beginning is that God would, and you can always have to nuance this word, but partner with humanity to bring forth its field, to bring forth its productivity. If you look at the fifth verse of chapter 2, there's an interesting statement. It says, God made the fields, but as of yet there were no crops. Why? Two reasons. One, God hadn't sent rain. That makes sense. But then two, because as of yet there was no humanity to till the land. What appears to have been God's intent from the beginning is that human beings would in some fashion, again, putting quotes around the word, partner with God to take this perfectly resourced environment and to carry it forward. Now, of course, God didn't have to do that. If the garden suggests that he's going to use humanity to provide for the needs of this flourishing population through humanity's own work, he didn't have to do that. He could have, for example, said, I'm going to feed the world on a daily basis by dropping little bread flakes from heaven, manna. And if that was the case, then you and I each day would go out and stick our tongues out till we were full, come back at lunch perhaps. God did that for a brief period in history. But God didn't do that. God said, instead, I'm going to create human beings who are capable of pooling their resources. We call that capital. Who can design an oven. We call that innovation. Who can gather supplies from a supply chain. Who can bake bread. That's operations. Who can put it in trucks. That's logistics. Who can take it out to feed a hungry world. And that's the purpose of business.
We're going to pause on this point. This is only part one of a two-part presentation. But as usual, I want to remind you all to connect with us on the internet, on social media, by going to embassychamber.com. That's embassychamber.com. You can also, at the website, become a member of the chamber by either clicking the Join Now button in the center of the page. As you scroll down or in the upper right-hand corner, you can find the link that says Become a Member. So it's free to join, and we'd be happy to assist you in any way that we can to get your business going or help you advise you to get your business growing. Or just to give you some tips on the things that entrepreneurs, business owners need to know and don't know. But any way that we can assist, we're willing to do that. On social media, you can find us in three ways. You can find us at Embassy, INTLCOC, or the business page at Embassy International Chamber of Commerce. Likewise, we're on Twitter at Embassy, INTLCOC, as well as Instagram. Thank you for joining me, and we look forward to hosting you again on next Wednesday. Keep in mind that we'll post all of the podcasts Wednesday morning, 7 a.m., Wednesday evening, 7 p.m., live chat discussions. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time. Until then, remember, we're connecting faith at the intersection of business. God bless you.